Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the show. I am going to start a recording for Dr. Tim. He's not going to be with us today, and then Michael and I will be back at 1 o'clock. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes, your host for the first hour, and today is Monday, April 29th, 2019, and we're thrilled to have you joining us today on Mind Shifters Radio. We are, for the past 8 years, 5 days a week, teaching people about some of the most powerful practical tools to improve the quality of your life that I've ever learned in my 44 and a half years of doing therapy. And we're thrilled today to have with us Corinne Zupko, or Zupko, got it right this time. Corinne has written a book, and I'm excited to be able to share an interview with Corinne because it's a very practical set of tools for managing anxiety or you might say healing or curing anxiety. And so Corinne is a specialist in education. She has an LPC. She's the author of the best-selling and three-time award-winning book, From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace, published by New World Library in 2018. Corinne Zupko was diagnosed with her first anxiety disorder at a very young age and struggled with debilitating anxiety for nearly 3 decades. Determined not to let anxiety run her life, she dove into the living principles of the psychological and spiritual text, A Course in Miracles. With the course and mindfulness meditation as tools on her journey, she has found inner peace to be unstoppable and now teaches others to discover it in themselves. Corinne is a keynote speaker, adjunct professor of counselor education at the College of New Jersey, licensed counselor, board-certified coach, and teaches weekly mindfulness meditation classes at Bank of America. You can sign up for her free 3-part video crash course on undoing anxiety with A Course in Miracles at the following website, fromanxietytolove.com/crashcourse. So, Corinne, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Dr. Tim, thank you so much for having me. I am just so honored and thrilled to be here. I'm really inspired by the work that you're doing in the world, you and Dr. Michael Rice and everybody on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm very, very pleased that somewhere along the line we're creating a network of people who go out and read other books and then come back and say, hey, have you heard about this? Because that's how I found out about your work. One of the people who listens to our show on a regular basis mentioned you, and I have such high regard for that person's opinion that I immediately bought the book, and here we are. I am thrilled to be able to share your work with our audience, as I said, because it's so practical. So how did you get on this path?
Wow, that's a great question. So this path, I would say, found me, although I did do some searching. So as you shared in my bio, I have had quite an extensive history of multiple psychiatric diagnoses in the anxiety disorder realm. And my first anxiety disorder diagnosis came at a very young age. I was around 2 years old, maybe one and a half, somewhere around there. And that was separation anxiety disorder. My mother could not leave a room, even in our own house, without me screaming my head off for the first, I think through, it may have been through like late elementary school, where I couldn't take art classes because I couldn't, although I did take art classes, she had to be there is my point. Like, I could not do anything unless she was there with me. So that was my rocky start in the anxiety sphere. And, you know, as I grew, I developed phobias as a child. But I'm sure, as you know, with your background in psychology, that the college years are a time when mental health issues surface for a lot of people, you know, that age range around that time. And I was no exception. So my sophomore year, I remember it was finals week of the fall semester, so it was around, you know, maybe mid-December, I learned that a student who I didn't know died very suddenly of meningitis. And health triggers, health fears were like my number one anxiety trigger. Lots of my phobias when I was younger was surrounding being afraid of getting sick. I would be really nervous, like, going to a restaurant because I was afraid of overeating and getting a bellyache, pain. I'd ask my mom if I was going to die. Like, I really, really had a high amount of fear surrounding sickness and death. And when I was in college and this happened, I remember that day just feeling this flood of fear when I learned that he suddenly passed. And I calmed myself down enough, kind of talked myself through it to get through the day, went to bed. And that night, I remember waking up feeling as if I had just been punched in the stomach. And I was punched in the stomach by a flood of stress hormones. It was my first panic attack, only at that time, I didn't know what was happening. I was gasping for air. My heart was racing. It felt like it was going to explode. I was shaking. I was sweating. And it was just this feeling that the world was just sort of crashing in on me, and it just felt like my death was imminent, that I was just going to die. And I remember getting out of my bunk bed. I was on the top bunk, and my knees could barely support my body weight as I sort of shakily, you know, climbed my way down the bunk bed. And back then, we didn't have cell phones, so I grabbed my campus phone in our room and stretched the wire out into the bathroom, hoping not to wake any of my suite mates. And my mom picked up the phone, which was miraculous because it was 3 a.m., and she sleeps like I do. We both sleep with earplugs and, like, a white noisemaker and anything to blot out noise. But through all of that, she heard the phone ring at 3 a.m. I think something in her just knew that she was needed. And together we figured out I was having a panic attack, and she kind of talked me through it. And at that time, she had already begun a spiritual pathway, and she was into this weird thing called A Course in Miracles that I wanted nothing to do with. What do you, you know, when you're a loving parent and you are trying to give something to your child that you think is helpful, what happens often, but we're like, no, I don't want that. You know, we resist. And that's exactly what I had done up until this point whenever she tried to talk to me about anything remotely spiritual. However, at this time when, you know, I was on the cold tile floor in my suite bathroom feeling like this was it, you know, that I was going to die and I was never going to come out of this, as we talked, my mom said to me, she said, you know, Corinne, I know you haven't wanted to talk about this before, but there's this book that I study called A Course in Miracles, and it's all about the finding and the keeping of that state of peace. Would you be interested? And at that point, which was my rock bottom, I said, yes, I will try absolutely anything, you know, bring it on. I think I went home that very next, it was within a couple days, I pushed my way through the final exams that I had to take, and my mom gave me my very first copy of A Course in Miracles, and I remember opening the book and reading the first few lines, which says, "Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God." And I literally was like, huh? I had no idea what that meant. But the best way that I can describe it is that it felt like a light went on in my heart. There was something in me that stirred that said, yes, this is your pathway. You're going to find the answers that you need. This is going to help you. And I have, that was back in 1996. I've never put the book down since. I found that it just has layers and layers of understanding and experience, and it just continues to deepen for me. So it was really the depths of anxiety that brought me to this path. And I imagine for many of us, you know, we come to doing deep inner work like this because of pain. You know, we don't tend to crack open a text like this unless there's some kind of motivation, you know, where we're searching, you know, we're trying to find something. So in my journey, it was really this intense anxiety that brought me to this pathway. And therefore, and I can't believe, you know, if the younger me could hear me saying this now, she'd be like, what, are you crazy? But I'm grateful for the anxiety. I'm grateful for all of the difficult experiences, you know, gosh, and I mean, there were multiple diagnoses. There wasn't just separation anxiety. There was generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder. I'm grateful for all of it because that fearful intensity, those feelings, I allowed those feelings to motivate me to dive into this work more deeply than I would have otherwise. So I'm grateful for everything that I've been through, and of course I'm grateful to be on the other side. Oh, so that's a bit. That's the beginning of my journey.
Well, that's, you know, desperation is quite the motivator for those of us stubborn humans. Yeah. Yeah, and of course, the way you've turned this into a very practical set of tools intrigues me. Mm-hmm. There was clearly some innate genius in there, maybe underlying all of the anxiety, but you've done a marvelous job with this book. And one of the things I like about it is how it lays out so much step by step. And not every chapter, but many of the chapters have, here's something to meditate on, here's something to journal on, here's a mantra, set of mantra targets for the day. How did you choose that, the format for your book?
Well, you're really hitting on the key point about this being practical. You know, when you're in the thick of something really difficult, you need to know what to do. You need those steps. You need that breakdown of, you know, what exactly I'm lost in this. Help me out. What do I do? So my motivation with the format was to make A Course in Miracles accessible, to make the tools things that you can read and easily understand, because as I expressed in my story, I had no comprehension for about, I'd say, you know, as I was reading the course and studying the course, maybe 15% of the message was going in. I wasn't getting all of it just because it took some time and I wasn't, you know, ready early on. But I really wanted this book to break it down in a way that anybody, whether you're familiar with A Course in Miracles or not, could pick up the book, apply the tools, and see results, because it's really the results piece that I'm focused on, because I know how uncomfortable and painful anxiety is. So all of the steps, all of the tools, the mind-straightening mantras that you mentioned, the journal prompts, the meditations, these were all things that I used as I dove into the course. A lot of it did come from a place of inspiration, but, you know, I took 6 years to write this book. So I was not one of those individuals who set out to be an author. What happened was that I went through another very debilitating episode of anxiety in 2009, 10 years ago. And that was actually a turning point for me in my spiritual growth, because that's when I really started applying and living this work. And as I did that, I started finding that the anxiety was just shedding. Like, it was as if, you know, like a snake sheds its old skin. It was as if it just started falling away. And I knew I had to write down the specific things that were helping me. So literally, as I thought, as a mantra came to me, as a helpful quote struck my heart, as I was studying, I would write it down, and I found that, like, okay, I think I'm writing a book. I think it's all coming together into this format, because I just had this inner drive to put it down on paper, the exact things that were helpful to me. So that's really, the format really came out of my own experiences and my desire to make this very accessible to others, because, like I said, I know how uncomfortable and painful the experience of anxiety can be.
Well, yeah, you said at one point in the book that my panic attacks used to happen spontaneously during the day. They woke me up at night and sometimes lasted, take a breath, everybody, 2 weeks at a time. The dry heaves, stomach spasms, and trouble eating were evidence from the ego that I was losing my mind to anxiety. But I refused of recovery. So congratulations for refusing and for compiling this book, because it has succeeded, in my humble opinion, of being practical. One of the things about it is, so often when people run into the Course in Miracles, they are stuck on the words and find it difficult to read because it uses many different concepts without always clarifying. And you've done this work here in this book of laying out the course quotes in the context of your work so that they become far more understandable, at least to my eye, with my limited knowledge of the course. I have far more experience with the Way of Mastery, but the concepts are the same. Mm-hmm. And so congratulations for that. There's so much in the book. One of the things is, in your third chapter, you talk about two choices and two voices. Can you say a little bit about that?
Definitely. So we have, I like, the way that I think about this, and this is, you know, what the Course teaches, is that we can think about having two thought systems in our mind. One thought system is the ego-based, fearful thought system. This is the thought system that tells us that we're just limited body. It's the thought system that's, you know, where all conflict comes from, where all difficulty comes from, that clashing, you know, that we might feel with other people when we feel like somebody has just attacked us, and how we need to defend and we need to attack back and be right and, you know, prove our innocence. This is that fear-based thought system that is fabric to the external world that we, you know, that we see. And it's out of this fear-based thought system that's in our minds that is the cause of difficulties when we're listening to it, when we're believing in it, when we're giving it our energy. The good news is that we have another thought system in our mind that is accessible, that is right here always, and it's a thought system based on love. It's who we are. It is what we are meant to express in this world. It's how we're meant to live. It's how we're meant to be. And the trouble is that this fearful thought system is really tempting. Like, it's got a lot of charge to it, you know? Like, when something kicks up, it just seems like it can take over. And this loving thought system is always there, but it's still, it's quiet, it's conflict-free, there's no drama there. And so these two voices that are in our minds, this voice of fear, this voice of love, or two thought systems, give us in every moment a choice. And we have that choice. Where are we going to pump our belief and our energy? Are we going to pump our belief and our energy into the fearful thought system and keep the difficulty, the conflict, the drama going? Or are we going to make a new choice to step out of that, to release that voice and choose again this other thought system, this voice of love? And so as we listen to this voice of love, we find, again, that experiences can come through that teach us that this is who we are, this is how we're meant to live, this is our happiness. You know, part of our problem is that we often think that the things in the fearful thought system make us happy. Like, you know, a thing can somehow satisfy us, like a car, or the right house, or the right partner, where this loving thought system is saying, no, everything you need, your joy, your happiness, your completion, your innocence is inside you now. That's already here. That's already true. So it becomes a moment-to-moment practice in noticing, where is my mind? Am I pumping belief? You know, am I fueling thoughts of fear? Or am I going to make a different choice and choose a thought system based on love? So that is our choice point always between fear and love.
Well, and right here in the third chapter, you say, it's a theme park that is this earthly realm. Dream figures utterly convince us of our separation from one another. And that reminds me of the quote by Bill Hicks, like, life is a ride at an amusement park. Are you familiar with that?
I have not heard that before, no.
Well, go ahead and look that up. I've read it on the show several times, but you'll find it delightful. And in the end, he says, you know, it is it's simply a choice between fear and love.
Mm-hmm.
And the eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your doors, buy guns, and close yourself off. And the eyes of love instead see us all as one. So,
mm-hmm.
If you just search for Bill Hicks, "Life is a Ride," you'll get that. You know, the other thing, as I mentioned here, after you mentioned the amusement park, you bring in the quote from A Course in Miracles, that ego always speaks first and loudest. So what was one of the most, or is one of the most useful things you do to turn down the volume on the ego and turn up the volume on what you call your inner therapist?
I love that question. So I would say the number one thing to do, since the ego always speaks loudest and first, is to pause. So our problem often is that the ego, you know, that fear reaction kicks up inside and we have a knee-jerk response to it. We act from that spot, from that trigger. And the most practical thing that I do in those moments is to pause, to breathe, and to notice what's happening. We have to employ what I like referring to as radical honesty, being really honest with ourselves that, okay, you know, I'm feeling really hooked right now. This situation is really making me angry, and I want to lash out. That's radical honesty, is to name it like it is. So one of the most important things is to pause, to breathe, to even, like I just did, name what's going on. From, I guess it's neuropsychology, they have that expression, name it to tame it, where as we name what's happening, as we put a word to our emotions, that's been shown to decrease our amygdala firing. So if we can name what's happening, that can open that space up to pause. So that's, I would say, one of the first things to do. In terms of turning down the volume on the ego and increasing the volume on your inner therapist, I will just first begin by saying that the inner therapist is a term that we can use many different words to describe the same thing. When I'm talking about your inner therapist, I'm referring to the inner part of you that knows the truth, that knows that you are love. The inner therapist is our bridge, our link to our source. The inner therapist, part of our mind, knows the source. It knows the truth. So this part of our mind, we could conceptualize it as outside the thought system. So the fearful thought system is like a closed loop, and it's designed that way. It's designed to just keep you know, the ego garbage going. If the inner therapist is outside of that closed loop, the only way to tap into it is to ask, is to ask for help, to have that pause and to say, hey, there's got to be another way. That opens up that closed loop and brings in our awareness of our inner therapist. It allows us to access this loving thought system in our mind. So in terms of then how to increase the voice of our inner therapist, to me, that really comes through a moment-to-moment willingness. This is another practical term here, is to be willing, again, no matter what is happening, to pause and ask. So our willingness is everything. It's the precursor for change. It's how we connect with our inner therapist. Our willingness to see whatever is happening in our world differently is that doorway to change. So the other practical piece of increasing the volume of the inner therapist is to continually, on a moment-to-moment basis, be willing. You know, I'll even dive into an actual practice that I have in the book. And this practice is about tuning into your body. So this actually comes out of the work of a spiritual teacher. His name is John Mark Stroud, and I loved this so much, I had to include it. When that ego voice is kicking up, you can imagine that it's on its channel. So let's step back for a moment and visualize how radios used to look in the olden days when they had knobs and needles, and you had to turn the knob to fine-tune the needle to tune in to a radio station. So you wouldn't turn the radio to a country music station and then get mad that that station is playing country music when you want to hear hip-hop. What would you do? You would just change the radio station. You would tune into a different frequency if you wanted to hear hip-hop, and that's how you would then hear hip-hop. So with the voice of our inner therapist, with increasing the volume with our inner therapist, it's about learning how to tune into a different channel. The channel of the ego, of that fear voice, in my experience, often comes through that chatterbox, that monkey mind, you know, that racing, those racing thoughts, that mind that just doesn't feel settled or quiet. And sometimes I also have like a physical maybe feeling in my chest of like urgency. Those are ego channels for me. If I'm going to tune in to the voice of my inner therapist, I'm going to tune into a different channel. So where can I bring my attention to in my body to tune into that different channel? Because we experience everything in these bodies, so where can I bring my attention to? So for me, my feeling of connecting with my inner therapist comes from like a deep place in my core. It's this feeling that feels like it's resonating almost. There's a lightness. And in the book, I walk us through a meditation where you basically ask with your eyes closed for your inner therapist to direct your attention to a place in your body where you can most easily tune into that voice, that guidance. So when I'm triggered in the moment and I'm noticing those familiar signals, the red flag of the racing thoughts, the urgency, that, oh my gosh, I have to respond, I'll pause and I'll bring my attention instead to that place that I know I experience that voice in my core, and I'll stay with that. I'll listen to that until something comes through. So it might mean having to not respond to a text or an email or a phone call right away in order to give myself that space. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I hear so much in what you're saying that sounds like excerpts from Dr. Michael Rice's lectures, that the idea of tuning in to a different energy, and it's all always there. The ancient Aramaic word for prayer can be validly interpreted as to set a trap for God. And so, as Michael Rice talks from that definition in some of his lectures, he talks about the analogy of the radio dial. And Guy Finley, in some of his work, talks about getting quiet enough, pushing the distractions out, and he actually has a story where somebody's supposed to be listening for a rescue signal, but instead they're just surfing the dial, looking for anything to keep them busy and distracted. So it makes very good sense. You know, there's another story you have that I wanted to bring up. I want to make sure I don't forget this. It has to do with, and your phrase, I believe, is calling forth witnesses to love. And it had to do with going for blood tests. And I don't know if this was at a time before you had mastered some of the constant fear of disease or not, but can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm so glad you brought that story up, because that was really one of the pivotal learning experiences in my development of trust. So this definitely was earlier in the game, but still I had years of working the course under my belt at this time. And as I've said already, my biggest triggers have always been health stuff. So I used to, you know, feel something that was a little off with my body and, you know, like, oh, maybe you just have indigestion. I'd go to the worst case scenario, like, immediately. Like, my mind would go from 0 to 100. I was dying. It was, you know, X, Y, or Z disease. And if I heard about the latest outbreak of something on the news, that would always spike my fear. So I had a lot of baggage and triggers surrounding illness and sickness. So this story is that I was having a physical symptom that I have always had. It wasn't a big deal. It didn't amount to anything, but there was just a day when I decided to start worrying about it, which is so, you know, part of the anxiety pattern. And so I went to a doctor to get this symptom investigated, even though it had always been there, literally probably since the day I was born. And when I was at this doctor's office, they were drawing blood, and I'm sorry for anybody who has, you know, needle anxiety. I will not give you details, I promise. But just hear me out, because this is a pretty powerful experience. So I'm getting the lab work done, and the nurse is chatting with me, and she asks me why I'm there at the doctor's office, and I tell her, and she looks at me, and she goes, well, that's not good. And, you know, that made me uncomfortable, and I got a little defensive, and I was like, well, you know, I've had this symptom my whole life. And she goes, well, that's not good. And then she looks at me, and she goes, don't you pass out on me. So guess what I did? I, you know, got that vasovagal pass out response, and they had to put my feet up, and they brought me juice and gummy worms. And I could have gone down the road of blame, of pointing the finger that nurse was the cause of why my anxiety spiked, you know, that she's a lousy nurse, she was insensitive, she didn't say good things, et cetera, et cetera. I could have gone there. But at this point in time, I had been working with this material for long enough where I knew that the thought that was already in my mind was a thought of fear. It was a thought that, oh my gosh, there might be something wrong with me, I'm scared. That was the thought that needed to be removed. That was the thought that was driving the whole experience. And so she showed up. She was a witness for fear. She agreed to play that role to strengthen my fear, because I had this thought of fear in my mind. And it was like I was looking for witnesses to affirm my fear. And she agreed to play that role. So fast forward, I'm I'm in the doctor's office still, but now I'm better and I'm in with the doctor. What does he do? But he says, okay, here you go. Here's a prescription. You need to go get more lab work done. We're going to do a whole extensive, I think I had every lab test under the sun. So that, you know, was even, I had to go to a hospital to get these additional lab tests done because they were so involved. And hospitals were even a bigger trigger for me than doctor's offices. I was terrified of them. So in my head, I was like, oh, great. I just went through this experience with this nurse. And now I have to go to a hospital and, you know, go get these labs done again. But what I decided, knowing what I knew, knowing that I chose to look at it, that I called that witness for fear forward because of the belief that was already in my mind, which was a belief of fear, a belief that, you know, I've got to be finding out what's wrong with me, or a belief simply that there was something wrong. I went to this hospital, and I was still very nervous. So even though I wanted to do this experience differently this time, I was still nervous. But what I kept saying to myself was, I want to call forth witnesses for love. I want to call forth witnesses for love. I essentially was saying, I want that belief in wholeness and in love to be in my focus, to be in my awareness. That's the belief that I want to take over, that fear belief. And therefore, I want witnesses for love in my experience to show up to reinforce this new thought in my mind. Not that love is a new thought. It's always there. But that's what that's how I conceptualize it. So I went into this outpatient lab, still nervous but determined to call forth witnesses for love. And as I walked in, behind the desk was the mom of one of my college roommates, and I was so happy to see her. I had no idea that she worked there, and I thought she was the receptionist because she was sitting at the front desk. Without my asking, she got up, and she walked me in the back. It turns out she's a nurse, and so she did the lab work, and the whole time we were just chatting about her daughter, my friend's children, her grandchildren. There was no pass-out response. I made it through. But here's the big moment. As I was leaving, I was literally walking out the door, and she said, Corinne, it was a Monday. She said, Corinne, it's really great that you came in today because I never work on Mondays, and I got called in 30 minutes before you showed up. And I still get goosebumps sharing that story because that, to me, was a witness that the power of decision is my own, as A Course in Miracles says. I have that power in me always to decide which thought am I going to fuel, which belief system, which voice am I going to pump my energy and my belief into. And in that experience, which was still anxiety-provoking and, you know, still scary, I still, however, was determined to place my allegiance, to place my faith in that love thought system and love which I am. And she, to me, was a manifestation or evidence that this works. So that was my really, really powerful learning opportunity.
Yeah, I love that story, and I love the idea that handing things over to the inner therapist being harder than looking with the inner therapist. Can you say a little bit about how you conceptualize the difference and how you got to that?
Yeah. So basically, in my work, I call on my inner therapist all the time because, like I said, I conceptualize it as outside of the fearful thought system. It is this voice of love in my mind, and this is what I want to be listening to. So whenever I'm going through something challenging, to be a miracle worker, to experience miracles, which are these shifts in perception, which are expressions of love, I need to hand my stuff over to my inner therapist. I need to call on my inner therapist for help. And the way that we think about this is what we're getting to in your question. So I can say, okay, here's my difficulty. Here is my fear. Inner therapist, here you go. I'm tossing this into your hands. I'm releasing it. I'm giving it to you. But what I mean when that can feel hard is how we can then immediately go back into worrying about it. It's like we don't hand it over and let it go. We say, okay, here you go. But then we keep mulling over the fear thought. We keep, you know, trying to problem solve.
Wait,
we keep trying
wait,
to
you
fix.
Didn't, wait, you didn't fix it yet. You didn't. Wait, it's
right,
still
exactly,
here.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I still have it. Like, come on. Like, where are you? Hurry up. And so to.
Dear Lord, give me patience, but give it to me now.
Give it to me right now. Exactly. Exactly. So,
well, so
I found,
so the,
oh, go on.
Let me just say that as you go to finish this, in this work, Dr. Rice talks about one of the biggest traps of our non-being mind. He talks about your true nature is the being of love, is this energy of creation and form. And then the non-being mind is this ego, et cetera. And the biggest trap is to try and figure it out. And you go on here to talk about how we're not asked to do the inner therapist's job.
Yes.
We
yes.
really need to hand it over, but sometimes it's hard to hand it over, and I love that you've come up with this idea, all right, I may not be willing to hand it over, but I'm going to look at it with the
yes.
therapist.
Yes. Thank you for adding that. That's beautiful. Such important points in there that we are not asked to do the inner therapist job. We are asked to do so little. A Course in Miracles says that the ego finds it insulting. You know, we want to do more. So when I feel like handing something over just feels too great because I'm impatient and I'm going to keep worrying about it, I will imagine that my inner therapist is looking at that issue. I'm looking at it with my inner therapist. So I'm not hiding it. I'm not keeping any kind of dark cornerstone. There's nothing lurking in the shadows. I'm literally saying, here's the fear thought. Here's the darkness. I'm willing to look at this with you. And I actually picture a light, love, something beyond me beaming down on this issue as we're looking at it together. Because as we look at it together, that's also where it feels less scary. In my own journey, if I'm trying to look at my own darkness in my mind by myself, like, it can be kind of intimidating and feel pretty icky. But when I am imagining that I am looking at this with this higher part of my mind, this true self part of me that is wholly loving and there is no judgment and its job is to heal, then bring it on. You know, I'm not afraid then to look at any of my own stuff, my own ego, my own, you know, darkness or pattern, because I'm looking at it with the light of love. So that just feels easier to look at something with rather than feel like you have this big thing that you have to somehow let go of and hand over.
Well, that's, I love what you just said there. I read your book and made a lot of notes, but I didn't get this image. And it might be in the book, but the way you just said it, of this bright light shining on it, illuminating the issue, and looking at it with the inner therapist, which you talk about very well throughout the book. You know, in the 22nd lesson from The Way of Mastery, it says, the title of the lesson is, self-honesty is the greatest act of love. And you bring that home over and over again, that in order to heal, I've got to be really honest with myself about my willingness to heal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I say I want to get rid of this thing, but I'm not really willing to change anything about what I'm doing that might actually be creating it. So I love the idea that you have in there about just asking yourself, are you willing to be willing? You know, you back it up a step or two.
Mm-hmm. That's so key. We really do have to be so, because if there's any inkling that, you know, no, I don't want to let this go. Like, that person was a jerk and I want them to pay. You know, I want them to know that they're wrong. I have to be honest about that, because if I'm not honest about that, I'm just kidding myself and none of this is going to work. So that honesty is key, and I'm so grateful that you brought up that beautiful quote some way of mastery, because I completely agree. And this brings up for me the importance, this is something else I talk about in the book, of asking yourself, do you want to heal or do you want to just fix? And what I mean by that, healing is about uprooting and undoing those thoughts of fear in the mind. Fixing is about just wanting to keep everything in the mind as is, but you want the external picture to just be happy and nice. You know, you want the anxiety to go away, you want the relationship difficulty to go away, but you don't want to change anything inside. You don't want to have to look at any of that or, you know, do this work or actually, you know, uproot a belief or a thought in a separate self, which for me is what this journey is all about, is learning that we are not separate from love. We are not separate from one another. Love is literally who we are. And it's in the awakening to that, even just scratching the surface of starting to realize that we are not separate from love, that these issues like anxiety in my experience just falls away. I don't claim to have uprooted that belief in a separate self. I've at least scratched the surface. And what you read earlier about where I used to be, like the panic attacks that lasted 2 weeks, and the dry heaving, I went through a difficult episode 10 years ago, like I mentioned, and I am light years from that. Like, I've had moments of feeling like I couldn't make myself have a panic attack if I tried. So the healing for me has been profound because of my commitment to being honest, my willingness to look at the thoughts and beliefs that I'm holding in my mind, and my willingness to uproot, question those, and have those be replaced with love.
Well, as you were saying that, you know, that another thing I have highlighted here is that you've quoted Rene Descartes, who said, if you would be a real seeker after truth, it's necessary that at least once in your life you doubt, as far as possible, all things.
Mm-hmm.
And in this work, we are called over and over to question what our culture trains us to believe. You made me angry. You scared me. You insulted me. You hurt my feelings. And we're called into the direct observation that that's never happened, that this is all an inside job, that every emotion I have is created by the beliefs and thoughts that I pour energy into. And the good news there is I can change it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's that place of empowerment. It's worth staying a victim, a passive victim of the external world. How depressing is that? You know, that perhaps satisfies the ego, because that's exactly the ego, what the ego wants is to, you know, place cause outside of ourselves and not look within. But if I can instead say that what I'm seeing out there is a direct cause, is a direct effect, excuse me, of what's in my mind, I'm now in a place of empowerment because I can choose again. I can now do something about it. So I have found in my own journey that this term radical responsibility, where I'm willing to be responsible for everything that shows up in my experience, it's all showing me something that's in my mind, that is no longer in the slightest bit upsetting or threatening to me. It puts me in that place of empowerment because now I can do something about it, and I'd much rather be empowered than be that passive victim.
Well, and I really am grateful for the way you put these steps together and referenced, you know, this the work, A Course in Miracles, that you've referenced. If people get introduced to it through your book, then they can do another whole level of deep dive. But the idea that you have outlined these practical tools and given people what you have found to be useful affirmations and targets for journaling and meditation practices is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Is there an area, you know, we've got about 10 minutes left, that we haven't even touched on yet that you want to make sure we get into the interview?
Ooh, great question. So I guess I feel moved at this moment just to go back to that idea of not doing the inner therapist job for it, because I feel like that's a really sticky area that we sometimes get so caught up in having to do and wanting to do, you know, I have to do more or I have to do this right. I want to just revisit that, at least just for a moment, to highlight that again, because I feel like that's so incredibly important in this journey. Now, just like you said, if somebody listening gets introduced to the Course in Miracles through my work and wants more, one of the things that I'll say about what the course teaches is there are multiple quotes in A Course in Miracles where it uses this three-letter word, for, meaning the Holy Spirit, inner therapist, whatever you want to call it, will choose for God for us. This word for shows up over and over again in the book, and I would just glance past that for years, almost like it didn't even register in my mind, and I would just read right past it. And then when I started noticing, and I actually, one of the first places that I noticed that word for, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's page 90. So we, on my study group, have lovingly referred to this as the page 90 prayer. And this prayer, which I'll share, and I actually have this prayer in my book because I found it to be like the perfect reset button. When you're going through something difficult, this is similar. There was a rather twisted cartoon on TV back in the 90s called Ren and Stimpy. Anybody listening might remember. And there was this one episode called Space Madness where Stimpy is not supposed to press this big red button, because if he presses this big red button, it'll just reset everything. It'll start over. It'll, you know, reset the universe and start over from scratch. And I like to say that this page 90 prayer is like that. So it goes, I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. So I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. There we are in this place of empowerment. I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself, but I can also decide otherwise. So again, I made the decision myself, so I can also decide otherwise. I want to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. Again, I want to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. And then it says, I do not feel guilty because the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him. And I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. So there it is. I choose to let the Holy Spirit undo the consequences, and I allow the Holy Spirit to choose for God for me. Now, first, I just want to say that the Course does use masculine pronouns. I have heard elsewhere that, I heard it from Dr. Michael Rice, the Holy Spirit is a feminine energy, and I know that the Hebrew version of A Course in Miracles refers to the Holy Spirit as she, so I absolutely love that. But in that prayer, it's putting us back in that place of empowerment, because I'm the one that must have decided wrongly, and essentially walks us into turning to the Holy Spirit, trusting, not feeling guilty for anything, because guilt is just another ego ploy that the ego will use to keep us in the fearful thought system. And it actually says in that prayer that that spirit, that love, will undo the consequences of our wrong decision. So we have nothing to be guilty for, and we just have to let the spirit choose for God for me. So that's the piece that I just really wanted to emphasize, is our little part is about being willing. It's about being willing to look at our stuff with spirit, like we talked about before, imagining that light just beaming down on whatever issue it is. And that's our small part, is to just take the darkness to the light. And then there is that replacement. There's that wiping away. A Course in Miracles calls it atonement. It's that wiping away of fear, the undoing of fear. As that block, that perception, is erased from the mind, what gushes in but the love that's already there, that love that's in us, that's already here in the here and now. We just don't seem aware of it or in touch with it because of the perceptions, the blocks that we've put in place that are fearful, that are sort of covering that. So I hope that that is super clear and makes sense, that our small part is to be willing to take that darkness to the light and to let spirit do its job, which is to choose for love for us, because we don't, I mean, let's be real. Like if you say, Corinne, you know, choose love, I don't know what that means. Like how, from my own limited standpoint, how can I possibly know what the most loving response could be in a situation maybe that impacts multiple people? If I'm going to be, you know, do something for one person, that could maybe potentially hurt another. I don't have the big picture perspective. So my small part is to turn to spirit, let spirit choose for love for me, and then act based on that guidance, that love that comes through.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly why in each and every worksheet, which is the core of the set of tools that Dr. Michael Rice offers, we're asked to cancel all the goals. And just like it says in Course in Miracles, you know, open a curtain in your practice, put away everything you think you want, your trifling treasures, put away, and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. Well, that's a part of every worksheet process. Getting out of, Dr. Rice says, if you want to heal, you got to be out of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that.
He also, you know, in one of the things I love that you included in your book is the quote from A Course in Miracles where it says, rest in peace is a blessing for the living, not the dead. I love that.
I love that too. I love that too.
And we're called so often in this work to try to remember that these things are happening for us in life, not to us. And if you've got the kind of tools that you lay out in your book and the body of work that the Course in Miracles and Dr. Michael Rice's work with the Kabbalah manuscript, which fits beautifully with that, then all these things are possible. Well, I don't know how to thank you other than just say thank you. And is there some place you would direct people to find out more? Do you want to invite people to join you
definitely.
In some place?
I would invite everybody to come over to FromAnxietyToLove.com. That's my website. I do a free Course in Miracles study group every Sunday night. It's a call-in number, similar to your radio show, where we read A Course in Miracles and talk about it together. I have a podcast, From Anxiety to Love Radio, on iTunes. I have meditation giveaways on my website that you can sign up for and online classes. So I do invite everybody to connect. I am on all social media platforms and probably spend a little too much time there. But I would love to connect with everyone.
Sorry, I just muted myself accidentally. So thank you so much for being here. It is a delight
to
have you. And I'm glad to have this book in my toolbox for people who have anxiety, and I look forward to your next piece of work, whether it's a book or another project. And please feel free to stay in touch.
Awesome. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Blessings.
Well, that was an awesome interview with Corinne from 2019, and so Dr. Tim wasn't with us today, so we pre-recorded that one. And we'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. And we welcome you to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is, I know the date that Dr. Tim gave was from April of 2019. But this is actually, today is Tuesday, March the 16th, 2021. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. We've already got two hands up.
Wow, so things are rock and rolling. Well, that's cool. Well, let me make an announcement before we get to the hands. Maybe the hands are in response to my announcement. I just did something that I've not done before, and we're going to turn it into a little contest. Deanie and I did some energy field work and breath work this morning, and as a result of that, I got a whole presentation for today's show. And so I actually sketched it out, and you've seen it, Jeannie, and just on a half a piece of paper. And I could actually turn it into easily a four-hour presentation, but I probably won't do that. It'll probably only be 15 or 20 minutes after we read from the book. But for those who are participating in the Codependence to Interdependence Intensive, if you go to your WhatsApp link for the Codependence Intensive, I just posted a picture of what that page looks like. And so I'm going to challenge you to take a look at that on WhatsApp through your private link for the intensive and have a look at the picture. And the person who gets closest to being able to tell me what everything on the page means is going to get a free copy of Aramaicisms. So that four-hour video conversation with myself and Dale Ann Hoffman. So if you're in the codependence to interdependence communication practicum, then, you know, the last one or this one, you've got a private link to the WhatsApp group for that group. Go take a look at the picture. Call in. See what you can tell me about it. And let's see. Maybe that's what our hands are about. Let's go for it, Tweety.
Okay. The first one is area code 602. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Jeannie. This is Cecilia in Phoenix.
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Can you hear me okay?
You are loud and clear.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your work, Michael. Unbelievable. It's otherworldly is just what I want to say. But I also just did a worksheet this morning, so I wanted to comment on that. Can you...
Can you hear me? He said, "Yeah, he's muted." He said, "Go for it."
You're loud and clear. I had my mute button pushed. I apologize, but I can hear you loud and clear, and I'm delighted it's impacting you the way it is. I know that with the work of Jeannie, there's been a whole new level of work being done between Jeannie and I, and
yes,
with what's opened, it's like
it.
A whole new perspective.
I can feel
it. I got it.
Yeah, I knew you. I started work with you back in Dayton, 20 years ago, and I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get, not because of you, because of the level that I was at. So I'm
back
again.
Have the brain cells.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I did see a video of you saying that it takes, like, I don't know, decades to try to get this. I don't know if you said decades, okay?
My take is that the average person, when they're first exposed to it, they actually engage in the work and do it. It takes 5 to 10 years to really comprehend where it's going.
It took me 20.
And what the possibilities are. And I've been doing it for 50 years, and I'm still just starting on a whole new levels to comprehend what's possible and where it's going.
Oh, isn't that awesome? I mean, it's really good. It's not like, okay, you graduate from eighth grade and you don't have to ever do eighth grade again. But, you know, anyway.
Sometimes I feel like I'm still in kindergarten after 50 years.
Okay, cool. You become like a child, right? Like a newborn babe, you know? I mean,
that's
just
it.
To have
that's
the mind,
idea.
The
that's
open
the part
mind,
of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a part of us we need to reclaim.
So here's the situation is that if I were to try to do this worksheet very quickly here, my situation is I pets it for a guy at noon for free. And in exchange, he barters. He's a professional painter, and he owns three properties that he rents, Airbnbs. I also clean for him, but I do get paid for that. But we're neighbors. We're, you know, we became friends of our love of dogs, first of all. And he's married. He's got a, you know, he's got a family, and he's, so he's a neighbor. And so my love of dogs, he could kind of tell that, because I'm always walking them. And he asked me for so to help him. And I volunteered to walk his dogs at noon, so the dog's not home alone all the time, just as a neighbor. And so he felt like not obligated, and in his heart, he felt like he wanted to, like, if my roof needed repairs, he would do it for free and all that kind of stuff. So that's what it's been for the last 4 years. But as it's, lately, it's become a little bit too close for comfort for me. So what happened is, right now he's going to paint two rooms of my house in exchange for the work that I do for him for nothing. And so he's coming up from behind me really gently, nothing, and he puts his hands on my waist, and it throws me off. I get into confusion, and I get into fear. I can't say anything. I'm paralyzed. And I part of me is like, well, I can't say anything because then I can't clean his Airbnbs, and I do make money doing that. So anyway, so I have – my feelings are fear, uneasiness, you know, and all that. And what came out of this worksheet is that obviously I am doing your work, and I know that it's some reality in me. So when I got to – and I don't want to punish him – but I feel like I'm going to punish feeling these feelings that are coming up in me, the incredible fear that he's going to come over Thursday and this is going to happen again. So I did this, and I did this worksheet, and I got to the punishment thing was on 1E was not owning and being responsible for this reality, and instead pushing my feelings down, and it's just going to happen again then. So who gets to be punished is me. So then I, you know, I'm going through the symptoms of healing. I choose that, which is the confusion I had when I started this, you know, like, I don't know, this seems real, but it's I know it's something in my mind that's not true. Okay, so all right, so I got to, it's a repeating pattern in my life. Not that I have this happen every day, but I stay away from men. I really, truly do, because when I do come out of the shadow and get, you know, I started sharing with him my healing about 2 years after I knew him. And he seemed to be a good listener, and I said, please tell me not to share if this is uncomfortable to you. And he would listen. I didn't share a lot. I didn't share in depth. It mostly had to do with a lot of sexual abuse that I had as a child. Okay, so anyway, I was unsure that I should share it, but, you know, he didn't ask me to share, but he would be listening. And so and now he's at the point where when he came over the other day to clean up, I mean, to see what the rooms were like and what I needed to do to clean them up so he could paint them, he would come up from behind me and put his hands on my waist and move me maybe a little bit over to this way or that way so that he could get through or whatever. And I'm not comfortable with that. So what is a repeating pattern in my life is that when I was 4 years old, my grandfather took his teeth out and French kissed me. When I was 11, my father, quote-unquote, taught me about the birds and the bees and had me, and I hope this isn't too graphic. I want to ask you that I not share if it's too graphic, okay?
Well, hold the space.
Huh?
We're breathing with you. We're breathing with you, and hold the space.
He had me at 11 years old sit on his lap, and he said, come here, I'm going to teach you about the birds and the bees because your mom's a prude. And she doesn't like sex, and I want you to learn about it. So he directed me how to feel him up, okay? And I'm very naive, 11-year-old. And when I got to the point where I didn't want to feel him up, I jumped off his lap and I ran away, and he started screaming, "You're a whore. You're a drug addict. You're a whore." And I didn't even know the words, okay? I'm like, okay.
Right.
And
I
then,
hear you.
And then my mother came at me not long after that, and she got in my face, and she said, "It's your fault. You turn your brother and your father on, and yada da 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 da, and you didn't." And I was frozen. I was totally frozen by everything in my family, with confusion and not understanding. And so I've been in Sex Addicts Anonymous. I mean, I'm sorry, not that. Survivors of Sexual Abuse Anonymous, 12-step groups. I've had sponsors. I've
right.
worked through it, God knows, in 2012. Anyway, I still have this victim story, obviously, that this is coming up is what came up on this worksheet. And I want to let go of this
right.
victim reality. So I did, you know, ask Ruka and Rachma and Kuba, I mean, and ask them to restore my mind to love. Now, I believe that we are all love, even my father, even my grandfather, who are pedophiles. My father told me that my grandfather was a pedophile. Took in pregnant women, and when they had their babies were born, he beat down their door and tried to rape their babies. So I couldn't talk about this my whole life. Are you kidding me? Anyway, so I mean, I've talked about it in my survivors of sexual abuse people, my sponsor. That was in 2012, and I talked to it in my adult children of alcoholics group and all that, not at this level,
right.
but with my sponsor there. And, you know, here's the deal, is I did not know Colin Tipping was learned from you, okay, until a recent video,
right.
which was very interesting, okay, because
right.
because I felt, I'll tell you where I'm at right now, and I have been a scene, a Nazarene scene for 26 years, but I didn't want to dive into it until last year. And so I'm, you know, I'm part of the religion now. Okay. So I understand your Yeshua and all that. Okay. And all the teachings and all that. Okay. From where I'm coming from. And I get, we are all love. Okay. We're all sparks of the divine. So we were doing a service, an Essene service, and online, and the guy was talking about forgiveness, and also in some of the teachings it says that if your house is ruled by forgiveness, anxiety and depression can't leave there. I live there, sorry. So when I heard that saying, okay, of Yeshua, I knew that I was riddled by anxiety and depression my whole life, and I knew I had to work on forgiveness. Now, I know I have all of your tapes, your CDs, your everything, okay? And I've listened to them before, but for some reason I looked up radical, because it said radical forgiveness in the person who does the Essene services online, and so or on Zoom, and so he said radical forgiveness, and I called him and I said, I found something online for radical forgiveness, and I sent him a link of you. And I said, I want to know what you mean by radical forgiveness. And he just simply wrote me back and said, just forgive. And I thought, okay, maybe he just doesn't know who I am, and he can't get into how deep it is. I don't know. But, you know, of course, you know, most people think forgiveness is forgiving somebody else. Okay, so I just said, that's fine. He gave me a simple answer. But Colin Tipping, actually, I did come back to your work because of that. But Colin Tipping, I came to when I put it online, radical forgiveness, because I wanted to know what it meant. And Colin Tipping came up, and I did his worksheet, and I heard him talk about sexual abuse on a video online. And he said, you have a victim story. 12-step groups just perpetuate the victim story. Okay, so then I'm like, oh, my God, they do. So then I'm like, okay, I get that. And I want to release and clean my mind from the victim story. Anyway, so my goal.
Let me interrupt you.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Go ahead and offer and tell me what your goal is. And then let's
my goal
you're
now
really in your story. Yeah. You
were
just said
were
my
you
goal.
Just saying I was
what,
really
what was
in my story.
Say?
Okay. Anyway, it's my exact goal is to be healed of the victim reality.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'll join you in achieving that goal.
Thank you.
And have we got some tools for you?
Okay. I know you do. I've got one in front of me.
Cool. Okay, so that's one, and that'll be an important one to work with, but there are two others that I'm going to suggest that you use. And they may be new for you, or they may be something that over the years that you've worked with my work that you've run into before. But the first tool I'm going to suggest is a tool we call a mind shifter. Are you familiar with mind shifters?
Yes, I am. I was in a workshop with you with it. But I need help with that. Is that on your website? Because I don't have a video on that one.
Well, we're going to do it right now.
Oh, awesome.
That's what we're here for. So,
okay.
Let me first of all define a mind shifter. A mind shifter is a thought about an issue in your life around which you have negative thoughts, and it's the opportunity to surface, process, and release the negative thoughts.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now, when you recognize that the mind works through resonance, if I say don't think about the color of your car, what's going to move in your mind but the color of your car?
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because my voice, actually I've never spoken a word, you've never spoken a word, nobody has. We have this little thing we call a voice box. It's actually a frequency machine. And we know how to cause it to vibrate air molecules. No sound comes out of our mouths. Sound is something that's generated in the brain by the brain. The only thing that comes out of our mouths is an energy that moves air molecules. There's those air molecules go to an ear on the other end, and there's a little sensitive piece of skin there, a membrane, that in response to the movement of the air molecules causes that little drum called an eardrum to move. There's some bones connected to it, and when those bones move, they create an electrical frequency that then resonates or causes brain cells to fire. So that's resonance. So if we can come up with the right mind shifter, here's what's going to happen. We're going to ask you to take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle of the page.
Right.
On the left-hand side of the page, I'm going to ask you to set a page up now. On the left-hand side of the page, I'm going to ask you to write the mind shifter that I'm going to give you when we're ready for that. And then I'm going to ask you to take a period of at least 4 hours.
Okay.
Your phone is off. Your door is locked. You're totally in your own space and stay focused, i.e., if you have to go pee or something, go and do that. But otherwise, you don't go eat. You don't go make phone calls. You don't remember that you should have written a letter to your grandmother 10 years ago and you're going to go write it now. You just stay with the writing for at least 4 hours.
Okay.
And so when you write the mind shifter, it's going to resonate some brain cells. And what we want to do is to start a brain dump so that everything in resonance with this mind shifter ends up flowing out onto the page.
Okay.
And in 4 hours, you're going to reach some deep unconscious parts of your mind.
Okay.
So the mind shifter, I'm going to ask you to write it down now. We'll go on the left-hand side of the page. Is this. Mm-hmm. All of the men in my life.
Okay.
Have always appreciated me.
Okay.
Are you breathing?
Okay.
Are you breathing?
Only from laughing.
Okay. Have always appreciated me, comma.
Okay.
for speaking up and asking them to keep their hands to themselves. Now, if my guess is correct, the first thing that your mind thinks in that regard is BS. Who are you trying to kid? Would that be accurate? And you're probably holding your breath.
No, hang on. I'm finishing writing this. Okay. So what came up is a complete release of sadness or something.
Say it again. Your phone just cut out a little bit.
I'm sorry. It was a bad phone. So what came up is this heat through my eyes and the water pouring out of my eyes.
Oh, write that on the page.
What side?
So now your body's already starting to detox.
Okay.
From the assaults that you've had.
So wait, write it on what side of the page?
On the right-hand side of the page. So now we're going to write down every thought that comes, every sensation that comes, everything that happens in your body, everything that happens in your mind. You want a detail on the right-hand side of the page. So on the right-hand side of the page, you write, my eyes are already weeping and moving, and whatever else the sensations are and or the thoughts.
Okay.
And usually you'll go through thoughts like, well, that's a lie. Men have never appreciated me speaking up. They've always abused me for it. Say again.
I'm sorry. I wanted to hear what you said.
Go ahead and say what you said, please.
Oh, my first thought was, I wish.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of same thing as BS. Okay, so that's what, so write down, I wish.
Okay.
So now I want you to spend at a point where you can block off 4 hours of time and just sit and write that.
Sit and write what? I just did.
Okay. And now what you're going to do is you're going to take that piece of paper and maybe a whole notebook and you're going to write that for 4 hours.
Write about what the sensation and thought that came up?
Write about anything and everything that happens to you while you're writing. And when you run out of things to write, why don't you write the mind shifter again? And then write what comes up. Write the
mind
shifter again.
Oh, I see.
Same mind shifter. And you're going to keep going for at least 4 hours.
Nothing comes up after 4 hours? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It'll come out. It's already started. So we don't have any problem with that. There's going to be a lot.
So after 4 hours of writing this, and what happens after 4 hours of writing?
Okay. Once you've written for at least 4 hours.
Okay.
And you feel like you're reaching a comfort point or a completion point.
Okay.
Then stop, go to something to eat, go for a walk, rest a little bit, whatever. Then go back to it and start to look at consciously what you've written. When you're writing, you don't want to censor it. If there's language, whatever comes up, you just want to put it on the page. Uh-huh. Even if it's things that you say, oh, well, I would never think that or say that, there it is. Put it on the page.
Okay.
And then once you've taken an intermission, go back and sit with it in your notebook and look at how many things are there that I need to do worksheets on.
Okay.
How much work do I have to do on what just surfaced?
Okay.
And there's going to be a ton of it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
So that's the first tool that I'm going to suggest to you. So let's say when it comes to, let's say the first thing that came up was, I wish.
Yeah.
So then you have a goal for men to honor and appreciate you for speaking up, telling you to keep their hands to themselves.
Yes.
So you go to a worksheet. And so what am I going to write? Well, I'm going to write about the time that I wanted to speak up to my father. I wish he would have listened to me. And my goal in number 3 is going to be, I wish my father had listened to me. I wish that Charlie, Bill, Mary, whoever came along. So do whatever worksheet you need to do there. And as you go through the list, look at each situation that you've uncovered from your unconscious, because that's what we're doing. We're opening the unconscious mind.
Okay.
Just start looking at it and start using the other tools that you've got. You know, whatever tools you've got in your lives, the ones you've gotten from me, the ones you got from Rattle for Forgiveness, whoever, from the scene, whatever tools you've got.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm
going
to go to work on these things until I clean this totally and completely out of my mind. So that'll be, you know, there's a combination. There are two things that have to happen in healing. One is the undoing process, and the other is the strengthening process. So this is the tool I'm going to suggest that in concert with the forgiveness worksheet you utilize for the undoing part.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or thoughts about that before I move
just
to the
one,
other tool?
Right now I can't do it when I get right off the phone. So just
when you can. You know, maybe it's going to be tomorrow afternoon you can block out that time.
Right. Can I find out more information about the mind shifters than this so that I can get clearer?
Yeah, I'm here to do that for you right now. Yes. I spend more time with it, but that's what I'm here to do with you right now.
Okay, so I have another question then. So upon completing anything that comes up from the first mind shifter, all the men in my life have always appreciated me. I see the goal. I wish, just write without censoring for 4 hours straight.
Absolutely, just let it flow.
And then
you want to do
and
a
then
brain
come
drop.
Back and then ask and sit with it, figure out how many worksheets will come up that I have to do, at least get an idea, and then the other question that I need to get clarity about is. Then I go do the thought that I wish.
Breathe.
Okay, that I wish men treated that honored that I spoke up, I wish my dad would have do a. What am I doing? A worksheet until
you might do 100 worksheets. I don't know. It sounds like
of
there's going to be a lot of worksheets.
Of what comes up with, I wish, the goal, I wish my dad would have listened to me speak up.
So when you do a worksheet, the core of the worksheet is in step number 3, where you identify a goal that you have.
Okay.
And then the core of the forgiveness process is the canceling of that goal and processing out whatever surfaces in response to it.
Right.
Okay. So you may look at that 4 hours of writing, and you may have 2 years of work to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. And you start doing it. And it might look like, you know, 12 worksheets. It might look like 200. It might look like 2,000. I don't know what's going to be uncovered. It's going to be some pretty heavy stuff, I suspect.
Yeah. Well, what was the worksheet
and so you do
for
that work as long as it takes to do that work.
Oh, but wishing my doing a worksheet on I wish my dad would have listened to me, that's
mm-hmm.
included. That's not something separate.
That would be one of the worksheets. That's the first worksheet I'm suggesting that you do.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that'll be
all right,
that'll be the first thing, and then you want to go through everything that you've written and do isolate and identify every goal that's on that 4 hours of writing that you need to start to cancel and clean up in your mind.
Oh,
everything that it points to. So that's just
yes.
the first, I just suggested the first worksheet you'll be doing.
Oh, no, that's fine. So I have one other question, and then I'll let anybody else that wants to get on.
Oh, we're not finished yet. We got another whole thing to do. So you've
okay,
got as
but
much
I have
time
a question.
As you need.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. So when the guys, we've got Thursday and Friday scheduled 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours each morning for him to come by and paint.
Mm-hmm.
Should I just be sitting there doing a worksheet while he's here?
Well, remember I said there are two parts to the process. One is the undoing part.
Right.
Here's the start of the undoing part, this whole assignment
right.
with the worksheets and all. The other part is the strengthening part. So we've got a different
right.
tool to strengthen you to handle that sort of circumstance.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Strengthening.
So the second tool is called responsibility communication.
Oh, yeah. I got that.
And actually, oh, okay, perfect. Good. Well, that'll be perfect. And I was going to say, you know, if you want to get more information on, if you've got all the videos,
Do you hear what I think you said or something? It's called that. Is that it?
Communication. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
But on the topic of the mind shifters, there's also mind shifters and introduction to still point breathing. Do you have that
okay.
video?
No, I need it.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, I just explained the process, but if you wanted a deeper focus on it, it's on that video. And or you could go to the website and order it. You can either order a physical copy of it, or we now have them all in digital format. So if you just order it, Gene will send you a link out right away, and you can watch it.
Awesome.
But
that's
it's
nice.
Not a necessity. You've got the tool down pat.
Okay.
I'm just realizing that we've got them digitally, so you could do that if you wanted to.
All right.
Okay. So now, the next thing I'm going to suggest that you do is that you go to our website, or actually, Jeannie's probably already put the link in the notes for today. And Jeannie, I'm trying to remember, there was a woman who was in India and experienced some sexual abuse from a therapist there, and she did a responsibility communication letter. Did we put that on the website?
I'll try to find it and put a link to it. I don't think we put it as a separate one, but I'll look and see.
I'm on your website right now. Would I be able to find it?
Well, let's leave that. That'll take more time than we want to take here. We want to give you as much time as we can. So we'll leave that in Jeannie's hands.
Here, what is this? Responsibility communication rules? Is that it?
Responsibility. Well, that's an outline. That's an outline for the tool that I'm suggesting, yes.
Oh, I see.
That'll be the outline. And there's a letter. Actually, there were two letters. There's one from a young man who is doing responsibility communication with his father around alcohol. That will be a good model for you.
Okay.
And the second one is a woman who was experiencing sexual abuse from a therapist, and she did responsibility communication with him around that. That would be another excellent model for
you. That's awesome.
So,
thank you. How will I get those?
We'll leave that in Jeannie's hands. She'll come back to us.
Do you receive texts on the number that you called in on?
No, I'd have to give you another number.
Okay, well,
Drop Jeannie a note.
Yeah.
Jeannie's
email is...
Okay.
J-E-A-N-I-E@Wygen. Yes. And then I'll send you links.
J-E-N-N-I-E.
And then I-E. No, just one N.
No.
Okay.
J-E-A-N-I-E@Wygen.org.
I got it.
And
then I'll send you links.
Okay. We do have that other letter on the site, though, honey.
I have not found it yet. No, the other letter that's on there is the one for Joy.
Okay. Well, if it's not there, I have it in my computer. We'll find it. We'll get it on there, and we'll get a link to her. So they will be the models for you. They'll be the models for you writing a responsibility communication letter to him. And it's actually such a sweet, perfect setup. I acknowledge you as a creator. I suspect you've probably watched our video on creating consciously. Have you?
Yes, I've watched them all, Michael, many times. I fall asleep with them on. So I'm not kidding.
Perfect. Well, here's my acknowledgement for you. You've got someone who perhaps represents a threat to you in your core issue, which is sexual abuse. But he's not a sexual abuser, has not become a sexual abuser.
Right.
But he's resonated all and brought it up to the surface for you. How perfect is that?
No, it is a gift. I keep telling myself that,
And he sounds like someone who's there, willing to listen, and will be the perfect sounding board for you to do responsibility communication with.
Awesome.
Totally, completely clean this up. I mean, what a perfect setup.
Oh, my God. Thank you for putting me into that context.
And I'll hold the space that he is just as gentle as you've put him forward is when you share with him about what's going on for you. And the idea of responsibility communication, you know, most people think when a reality shows up in their mind, i.e. I'm feeling threatened sexually, as in this situation, Most people take that and project it and say, you really threaten me sexually. What do you suppose the average person's going to do if I say that to them? They're going to turn tail and run. They're going to get angry. They're going to be defensive, whatever happens. You don't have to do any of that. You can do responsibility communication with him and say, hey, Bill, I have an issue. You know, I'm just going to kind of model a short form of what that might look like.
Okay.
And if you'd like, between now and Thursday, if you'd like to send Jeannie a copy of it, either she or I will give you some feedback on it to refine it. So it would look something like this. Gee, Bill, I have an issue that's come up for me in our interaction. I really appreciate the fact that you've been a friend to me and that you're supporting me and doing this painting, and I get to support you and take care of your dog. And it's really wonderful. But something came up for me the other day, and what I want to do is heal what's going on in me around that. So you've kind of set a framework up. That'd be the first step in the work. And commit yourself to communicating about this with him. And then the next step will be to lay out the mechanical facts of what happened. This is kind of the instruction set on responsibility communication. Lay out the mechanical facts. You know, I was in the front room and you were explaining something to me about blah, 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 whatever the situation was. And you came over and you put your hands on my hips and moved me aside. And what came up for me was feeling threatened about being sexually abused again. I have a history of that. So what that brought up for me. So right now you're not saying anything about what he did aside from the mechanical facts that he put his hands on your hip and move you over. There's no accusation. There's no nothing. It's total ownership. And man, that brought terror up for me, or that brought hatred up for me, or that brought fear, or maybe all three. And here's why. When I was a child, and you've shared that with him already, so he's already privileged to the knowledge. What a perfect setup. And so what I'm asking for is your support in healing this. Do you have any ideas?
Okay, wait.
And if he doesn't have any ideas, that might be the space for you to say, well, there's this forgiveness process, the worksheet process that I use, and seeing as how you've triggered that for me and I'm feeling safe enough to speak it and clean it up, I feel like you're the perfect person to hold the space for me and support me going through that. And maybe you'll have to explain a little bit about holding the space and have him sit there while you do the worksheet with him as the object of attention. And you
not with him there, right?
Absolutely with him there. That's the request.
Do the worksheet with him there?
Yes, ma'am.
So he's going to go through the worksheet with me?
Well, here's what I'm suggesting. And, of course, this is just a suggestion. You don't have to do any of it. But it sounds, again, like the perfect setup.
Okay.
So here's what the request would look like. So that's what's up for me, is this terror or this hatred or this rage or this fear or this sadness or this grief or all of you, whatever is true for you, to lay that out on the table with him. And and what I'm understanding about the healing process, you know, what one of my mentors, Michael Rice, has suggested that I do, is ask you to be here to support me with it. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take this worksheet, and I'm just going to bounce it off of you. I'm going to do the steps. And maybe you'll do two or three or four, five worksheets, this same worksheet, before you ever do this with him.
Okay.
But ask him to sit there at the table with you as you fill in the blanks. I, who am love, feel. Okay, let's do terror. And what's the situation? You know, what happened? Well, I was standing over in the corner, and Bill came over, put his hands on my hips, and moved me over. And what came up for me was all this fear about being sexually abused and this fear about speaking up to men. So just explain to him. Fill in the worksheet. Go through it. And you know, maybe explain it to me. And here's how the forgiveness process works. Now that I see that I have a goal for you to be a safe space for me, that's what I'm requesting from you. But at the same time, men have never been a safe space for me. So thank you for being here. And now I'm going to cancel my goal for you to be a safe space.
Okay.
And as you do, with him being there present with you, breathing and holding the space, which I suspect from what you said, he'll be happy and integritous enough to do, then the floodgates are probably going to open. And it will be a perfect space for all of this old trauma to be let loose.
Yes, yes. All right.
What a perfect setup. You are a genius.
No, I say the creator is a genius to set this up with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, your willingness is awesome.
Yeah. Okay, this is awesome. And, oh, my God, I can't believe I can actually – no, I choose to believe that I'm actually going through this in a way that's going to be healing.
Yeah, and, you know, there are lots of men who are delighted to be that space and that support.
I know he is. And that's why it throws me off, because I know
perfect.
He was safe enough to open up to after 2 years and –
yep.
opening up a little tiny bit
of
time.
So he's got the history. He's been the space. He's been your trigger. How perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
and if you were listening to the show last week, one day last week, or maybe it was a week before, you know, Jeannie, my wife, has had some really horrendous sexual abuse in her first marriage.
Okay.
And we've been together 16 years now.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a week or a week and a half ago that she got safe enough to open that whole file in her mind and share things with me. I mean, afterwards she said, I'm just shocked at myself because I've never told anybody that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And that's how
you
it melts.
Safe.
You know,
yeah,
that's how it
yeah.
lets go.
Yeah.
And I suspect, you know, one of the reasons, you know, all the confluences of the universe, when we talk about how it takes 5 to 10 years to really comprehend this work,
yeah.
you know, how has it all come together? You know, are you out there ready to a piece of healing? Jeannie, who's been doing this work for 16 years and really working at cleaning up that whole experience, and it just, I mean, that doorway opened and here you are.
Yeah, yeah.
How perfect.
Wonderful. Oh, my gosh.
How perfect is it?
Yes, it's so incredibly perfect because actually I haven't had pictures of my mother and father in my house for many, many years. And I've been doing this forgiveness work now for about a month again. And
right.
they're up on my mantles and everything. And I just realize I'm letting go of the victim story, but it's deeper than that. So this is the deeper part of it. This is, and just to put their pictures up it was a stage that I'm letting go, but this is deeper. Can you hear me?
Go for it. Go for it.
Oh, no. That's. I just wanted to say that because even my daughter's like, why do you have their pictures up there?
Here's what will happen as you heal.
Huh?
Here's what will happen as you heal.
Okay.
And you may open the genetic component for your daughter.
Yes, I want to.
Of this as well.
Okay.
Is that what I hear you doing is you're developing a deeper connection with love and compassion where you can look at your father who was pretty outrageously abusive to a young girl and your mother who did the same and recognize they were just functioning out of their trauma.
Yes.
And as you bring their energy back in, you can help to process that in your genes so that you become free of it. They become free of it. And if both mom and dad were in that kind of space, who the hell knows what their parents and their parents and their parents and their parents were like.
Yes. So I'm cleaning it up for all
that
the generations.
Energy window,
yeah.
And in opening that energy window, your daughter gets the benefit of it too because she gets to free energetically her genes from any form of abuse.
Yes. Yes, yes, that was my intention, and I knew it. Not just for me, I knew everything I want to help my daughter heal. I mean, I want this gone out of her genes, you know. And so she doesn't understand what you do. She actually took me to a workshop in Dayton when I was in my 40s, early 40s, and because I lived in Cincinnati, and she just sat there patiently, but she said, I don't get this, and I'm going to go get Starbucks down the street. I'll meet you when it's over.
You mean she brought you to one of my workshops in Dayton?
Yes. Yes,
how cool.
Did.
Well, hey, the circle returns, and maybe it's time for her to really understand it.
Yes, well, she listens to me. I'm telling her I'm so excited that this is finally sinking in and my life is changing, and I said it's so beautiful, and I can feel love in me, and I have no hate for anybody. I said, you know, and I mean, I obviously have feelings that I'm working through, but I own them. I'm not projecting them out. And so she's like, she's listening to me now. I'm not just telling her sad stories, victim stories anymore. I said, I'm not doing it anymore, Michelle. I will not do it. I won't tell a victim story ever again.
And what a perfect setup.
Yeah.
Hey, Michelle, remember that workshop you took me to so many years ago?
No, she hears about it. She goes, I don't remember.
Right?
That's her M.O.
Well, that's okay. But, well, and that's the M.O. of people who've been sexually abused. So that may still come to light with her, too. It wouldn't surprise me.
Right. Yeah.
So, and one of the reasons people run, one of the reasons people use drugs, one of the reasons people keep busy, which is the most common drug on the planet, the reason why people rage and scream and all the things they do is because they're running away from something inside of themselves.
Yes,
and
I know.
And you're turning around and facing it. And when
yes.
you turn around and face it, it dissolves.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
now it's just a memory.
Yeah.
But if we never process through the memory, then it yes. becomes a motive for behavior in the future.
Yes.
So here's my other suggestion.
Okay.
That you might ask Michelle, maybe the first worksheet that you do around this whole situation.
Okay.
After you finish your 4 hours of writing.
Yes.
Might be to sit Michelle down and ask her to be the space and hold the space for you to go through the first worksheet you do out of that writing.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And then perhaps, as you write the responsibility communication, you'll make a copy of the guidelines, make a copy of the sample letters for her, and ask
okay.
her for feedback. Is there anything else you see that I could put in here and do? And she'll just be walking right through the whole process with you. I mean, how cool is that?
Okay, so give her a copy of the responsibility communication.
I would suggest you print for her. I mean, especially since she took you to one of my workshops so many years ago. It's
yes.
like, okay, sweetie, here it comes, full circle. Here.
No, I wanted something to send to her. Is that what you said?
Perfect.
Send it to her?
Yeah. Anna,
okay.
give her a copy of the communication rules worksheet. Give her a
yes.
copy of the two sample responsibility communication letters.
Okay.
Ask her to go over them and support you in writing the letter to
uh-huh.
this fellow that you're going to be
oh.
sharing it with.
Okay. And,
and
go
and
help
you,
me write.
Build a
and,
whole new set of brain cells.
And help me write the and help and give me feedback about the worksheet I'm going to write for the guy.
Absolutely. And or
okay.
sit there and do I'm suggesting that the first worksheet that you do after you finish the 4 hours of writing, if she's available, ask her to be there and be holding the space for you, as you're going to ask this gentleman to as well.
To be here at my house?
Well, here, there, wherever it is. The restaurant, at her house, your house. Just that you invite her to be the one who holds the space for you to do your first big piece of work around this issue after writing for that four-hour period on the mind shifter.
Yes. All right, so, yes, she's in Cincinnati. I'm in Phoenix, so she's not going to be in person, but she can hold space for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She
can
hold,
it over
hold
the phone.
Space. Huh?
You know, there's Zoom. You can do Zoom for free.
With Ron's going to be here helping me do the worksheet at the same time?
Sounds like a plan to me.
With my daughter doing the worksheet and him? I mean, me doing the worksheet with my daughter and Ron holding his...
Is that your guidance?
That would be totally awesome. This is... Ron doesn't know what's in for him when he comes over to paint.
Well, you know, maybe he does.
Maybe
there's
does.
A part of him who knows exactly what he's doing.
He knows I love her with everything inside of me. I talk about moving back there, and he goes... you've got a nice neighborhood, you've got a nice house, why do you want to move back there? And I'm just like, because I just need to be around my daughter. He has a daughter, too, that he loves just as much as I do. I mean, as I love mine. So he gets it. Okay, so I appreciate the gift that you're giving me. It's the biggest gift that I feel I ever got in my life.
Yeah. So the other side of the equation is, I appreciate the gift you're giving me to give this to you. Because that's what our culture, that's what our world needs. There's too much of this been going on for too long.
Yeah.
And I think your courage has probably opened the hearts of everybody who's in this community and listening to this show right now, and people who will listen to this show 500 years from now will get a gift from what you've done, the courage you've shown, and the willingness. I mean, it's monumental.
Thank you,
because
I want to be a gift.
Tough piece of work.
Thank you.
And I suspect that Jeannie might have some thoughts to share with you, sweetheart.
Well, this is just super powerful. Thank you so much for opening up to us, Celia. And
thank you.
You know, being able to face it, it's, you know, for so many years, I just pushed it down and pushed it down and said, you know, okay, I don't have to look at my abuser again. I don't ever have to see him again or deal with this. But it was always in there running me, even unconsciously, and drawing situations to me where I, you know, the Creator was saying, hey, you need to look at this. You need to get it out of your system. You need to heal. And, you know, one of the things in the recording that, you know, Dr. Tim wasn't on at the first half, and he was playing a recording where he interviewed Corinne Zupko. And one of the things that he quoted was Rene Descartes and said, if you are a real seeker of truth, then you must at least once doubt all things. And then they went on down to say, I'm trying to read my notes and talk at the same time. If you ask yourself the question, do you want to heal or do you want to just fix it? And so to fix it is for this guy to, you know, behave himself and not, you know, push any buttons or trigger anything. But to really heal, you have to uproot all the thoughts and look at the anxiety and the panic and the, you know, all those things and question everything and then replace it with love. And being able to go there is a big step, and you've taken that step. And I'm just I'm here for you and with you, and please drop me that email and I'll send you back a bunch of links.
Okay.
All right. Breathe.
I've got my computer on me here. Thank you.
We are
How long did it take you to work through it, Jeannie? How long did it take you to work through yours? Like, I mean, have you been doing worksheets for how many years?
Well, the first time that I did a workshop was in 2004. And I just did that big breakthrough last week. But the events happened when I was 16, 17, 18 years old.
Yeah,
and so
15 years ago,
knocking it down for 50 years.
Oh. 50 years, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, being able to be safe enough to actually look at it and work through it and be done with it, so we can move on and actually live like we're supposed to live, you know.
Yeah. Like I was created to live. Yeah.
And out
and
of the
remember,
workshop work that Jeannie's done in that regard, Jeannie's got a women's workshop that she does that is, in many cases, focused on healing this whole sexual abuse issue with women. It's a workshop called Women Healing Women. And we've talked about her doing that as an intensive in the not-too-distant future. So
on Zoom, though? On Zoom?
Yeah.
It'll be on Zoom.
Oh, that's great. Yep. How do I sign up?
Well, I've got to schedule it first, so I'll put you on the mailing list.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
But, you know, also realize that when energies go into our physiology, into our mental, you know, whether it's mental, emotional, physical, whatever, and it creates symptoms, whether it's, you know, physical pain or whether it's mental stress or, you know, depression or whatever, as you're healing and those energies are coming back out, it may look the same. You may go through feeling the depression and feeling the pain. You know, I've been, how many years, Michael, since we did that
it
intensive
will.
In Florida?
It
and
will
I first
come out and feel the same.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, I went through intense hip pain for probably 8 years.
Okay.
After I first started looking at this again. And, you know, now that is gone. But occasionally, you know, I'll hit another layer and the hip pain will come back. And, you know, just recognize that you're moving in the right direction and that the energy is moving out of you, not in you, and don't get lost in the symptoms.
This reminds me, and I've thought this before, of the way you guys have the healing. It seem like that you're not healing, but you are, because it's coming out, because you're doing the work. But it reminds me of homeopathy. Homeopathy, it brings up the symptoms instead of repressing them, so the symptoms come up and get worse, actually, after you take homeopathic remedy. Yeah, you get that right.
Herring's Law of Cure.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly Herring's Law of Cure.
Herring's Law. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so...
He's the original homeopath.
Is he really? I was taught it was Hahnemann.
Well, I'm not saying the only, but one of the originators and who developed the understanding of the healing process, who initiated that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then through naturopathy, we've expanded that to recognize that the symptoms of healing are going to happen physically, mentally, emotionally, that those energetic patterns are going to move. And the healing process looks exactly like the disease process looks, and you want to be aware and conscious and stay soft and open so that those things can move rather than follow the old patterns of shutting down the breath, tightening the jaw, tightening the gut, whatever, and letting it all loose and let it open and let it go.
Oh,
let it be
so
removed
cute.
From your structure.
I think cute. Yeah. Yes, and I'm willing because I it's like I'm done with living this way. I'm done with being.
Yay. The world rejoices. Millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do.
Oh, yes, millions will. When we all do our work, we resonate in other people the strength to do it. Is that
true? Exactly.
Yes.
Right on track. Now,
thank you so much.
Just quickly, because we've just got a minute or so left, and I'm just going to throw out, when the symptoms start to move, what are the signals? When you become symptomatic, how do you tell you're in a healing process? And Jeannie, maybe you could send her the links to those shows where we did a healing crisis, where you had a conversation about healing crisis. But there are four things to watch for. When you become symptomatic, to make sure you're in a healing process rather than a disease process, first question you ask yourself is, have I been doing more and more of the right things? Well, obviously you are. So that's check mark number one.
Right.
Two, just before these symptoms occurred, and they may be physical, they may be mental, they may be emotional, did you reach a new level of vitality and aliveness? At a new level of vitality, energetically, you dig into the next depth of what needs to be cleared out.
What is your definition of a level of vitality, though?
Just your strength. You know, I mean, I go to bed at night, and I'm like, man, I feel so good. I haven't felt this good in 10 years. Wow. I'm on top of the world. And then the next morning, you wake up, and you wonder if anybody got the number of the Mack truck that went through your room during the night because you're lower than a snake's belly. What happened?
Well, it hit me this morning.
Nothing's wrong.
Hold on.
No, I want to finish these thoughts. So if you'd hold off, we've only got about 40 seconds. So when I hit that new level of vitality, the structure says, the old stuff you've hidden away, we can now handle that layer, and the energy is going to start to move, and it's going to start to come up physically, mentally, emotionally. So that's the third thing, or the second thing you ask yourself. Third thing is you look at what's happening with your elimination. In a healing process, there's an increase in elimination. In a disease process, there's a restriction elimination. And we're talking about all the eliminative organs, the bowel, the urinary tract, skin, mucous membranes, lungs, all of it. The fourth question you ask yourself when you become symptomatic, and you want to watch out for this, is what's the drug I used when this happened initially to keep it suppressed? Because as the healing process happens, literally the energy patterns of whatever drug was used in the past, whatever it is, rage, fear, alcohol, busyness, whatever it is, the energetic signature of that is locked in with the trauma that's being released. And when the energetic signature starts to come out, there can be a tendency to fall back into the drug. So stay conscious, keep doing the right things, let go of the drug and process through it. And that way you'll have the best year yet of your eternal life, and that's what we're here to support. And the show is going to cut us off in probably about 2 seconds. So I'm going to say thanks for your courage, and stick with us, keep us posted. We're here to support you.